Welcome to Mormon Happy Hour. My name is Colleen Dietz. Join me and my guests each week for an entertaining recap of the hottest topics in Mormonism. We keep tabs on social media and headline news so you don't have to. Don't miss our live pro tips as you adjust to your new and exciting post-Mormon life. Mormon Happy Hour is here to bring you the irreverent side of Mormonism, wherever you may be. Welcome to episode 80. This is part two of a panel discussion. So if you didn't listen to episode 79, part one, I promise you, you're going to want to back out and go back and listen to that, or else it's just going to launch into nonsense that you have no idea what's going on. So the recap and the explanation and everything is in part one, episode 79. If you already listened to that and you're still sticking with it, props to you. You know a fraction of what we went through to make this thing come to pass. This is an ugly topic, and I really hope that we were able to give it the well-rounded approach that it necessitates. So please enjoy part two, episode 80, panel discussion on the shit show that is currently going on in the ex-Mormon world. Enjoy.
People can act out of anger and not do so abusively. Mike, his entire MO is acting out of anger. Anger motivates so almost everything that he does out of this in this community, whether it's subtle as a motivation or whether it's just, you know, right on the tips of his shirt sleeve in this phone call. I want to go through the phone call. Is that okay with everybody on the panel?
Sure.
Okay. I want to go through this, and I'm going to give a trigger warning because it contains a lot of language that is not only questionable, but just downright abusive and unfair and unacceptable. And I want to try and examine what Mike said, McKenna's response to those things, the implications of what he said, and what we need to take away from it, as well as the cardinal sins of skepticism that Mike committed in the phone call that are also revealed in his 42-minute expose. So I don't think we've actually discussed this up to this point on the panel here, but the points that were the offenses that are described in the actual expose video that Mike uses with his, you know, his claims to these police reports, these are basically the bullet points lists, a bullet point list of the accusations that he finds didn't have any credibility and therefore completely destroys her character and any credibility that she has. There's that she swallowed razor blades while she was pregnant at P.F. Chang's in order to obtain a $30,000 settlement. There are multiple rape accusations, often of black men, one of a former boss, and none of those people were ever convicted. There's an accusation of a rape in the parking lot while she was on her mission in Washington, D.C. There's an accusation that she planted drugs on her daughters and then called the cops about that. Then there are three accusations just recently published about the Drano and the orange juice, about the car on the fire, and about somebody assaulting her near her home that led to her pictures on social media of her broken wrist and her bruised face. And then she has multiple cancer fundraiser scams. He details a number of those. And then there's the bogus trip for her daughter's fundraiser scam. So those are the bullet points that Mike used in order to claim that she is not a credible person. And the reason why we need to know those is because in the 14-minute phone call conversation, he asks for her response and then doesn't allow her to respond to any of these. And then he asks for a direct apology. And she says, no, I'm good. And then he continues to verbally abuse her. So I'm just going to give a very brief replay of this, and this is a fair trigger warning. This is not going to be comfortable for some people to listen to. If you don't want to listen to this, skip forward, 5-10 minutes, because there's kind of a lot here to tease apart. So all of it was this phone call was recorded before the 42-minute expose aired. It was made it clear in their brief exchange before. And then this is when they begin the conversation about the fake cancer funds. And McKenna says that she's talking to her therapist about this, that she was diagnosed with borderline personality disorder, which I think we need to speak to that, as well as dissociative identity disorder. I think we need to speak to those, what they are, how they manifest themselves, how they're brought about, and what the results of those are, and how McKenna's actions could be informed by understanding those things after I'm done with this little screed here. And then a couple of points, Janelle, you spoke to this. She said that if I did the things of like creating the fake cancer fund, then I need to own up to it, which is interesting, because she doesn't admit to doing it, but just basically says, if I did it, then I need to own up to it, which people can interpret that as weasel words and just trying to get out from under these uncomfortable accusations. Possibly she knows that she's in the wrong and doesn't want to admit to it, but there are also other reasonable interpretations of that information. Then McKenna responds to some more of Mike's berating by saying, if you don't want to be my friend, that's okay. Then Mike says, well, you have to understand it goes beyond not wanting to be your friend. And that's when he tells her of the upcoming expose video. And then this is where I think Mike was so blasphemingly out of line, just disgustingly repugnant in what he did. Because he talked about Chris and Becky Tucker, and he talked about it in the 14-minute phone call as well as in the expose. These are people who kept a foster child in their basement for years, malnourished, starved her nearly to death, didn't take care of her, basically gave this young girl a bucket to shit in and a wash basin to live with for years, chained to the wall. And Mike says that McKenna Denson is the worst person that he's ever met, and he's met these people who have tortured a child. Really, Mike? Do you think you've fucking lost sight of the goal here? Do you think you've kind of lost the point of what we're getting to? We're comparing somebody who may or may not have lied about some things in her past to somebody or to people who torture children and push them down flights of stairs. Mike, really? You want to stand by that statement? The fuck, man. And you know what? I'm pretty sure that Mike is actually going to listen to this, because, we're talking a lot about him. Of course he's going to listen to this. So I'm going to spend a little bit of time in this screed talking directly to Mike. Okay. So he, at the 5:45 minute, that's the mark of this 14-minute video. That's when he really gets into this. He says, if you were here, I've never hit a woman, but I would break your fucking nose. You are a worthless piece of shit. You faked cancer multiple times. And then he goes on to make the point that people get burned donating to a person with cancer who doesn't actually have it. They're going to be less likely to donate to people who actually have that need, who actually have cancer in the future. Now, that needs to be, that's a worthy point. That's a point that we should maybe discuss. That's tough. That's tough to deal with. But he could have made that point without calling her a worthless piece of shit and telling her that he'd break her fucking nose at the same time, right? Then he goes on to say that he'll completely destroy her character. Her attorney won't be on her side. Her book will never happen. Her movie will never happen. Her lawsuit with Joseph Bishop is done. And then he goes on to say, I've been cooperating with David Jordan. I've recorded every conversation we've had for weeks. I'm going to burn you at the fucking stake. So, to people who haven't been following this, does anybody want to talk about David Jordan a little bit and his role in this entire situation before I continue my screed?
I was just putting in the text. I'm like, oh, wait, we need to talk about who David Jordan is.
Oh,
David Jordan.
Yeah,
If we're going to name drop, we need to talk about who he is. David Jordan is the current attorney for, is it for the church or is it for Joseph Bishop? Are they both in it together?
It's one and the same, to my understanding. The church outsourced his Joseph Bishop's, their associated legal representation from Curtin McConkie, who was originally with, to David Jordan, to my understanding. So yeah, he is representing that side.
And let me just go on the record and say, when I was first hearing the details of Mike's plan and I found out his source, I was all sorts of icky. Like, that just, oh, down my spine. And maybe that has to do with this, like, us versus them mentality that I may have, because I'm an ex-Mormon and I feel victimized by the church to some degree, you know, and in this, you know, when McKenna came forward, we were all jumped on the team McKenna, and, you know, and back to what we were saying about the, you know, the information, the source.
Negative attributional bias.
Okay. So maybe it's my negative attribution bias amongst other things that I was like, well, shit, I don't want to be, you know, like, he's colluding with the other team. Like, this feels awful, you know, and also as a victim, I'm like, why the fuck are you teaming up with, you know, the enemy here in her, you know, lawsuit, because she's a sexual assault victim. And I'm like, I don't even care what you're telling me about her. The fact that you're the single fact that you're teaming up with the enemy really, really rubs me the wrong way. And it always will. I will never be able to reconcile the fact that he teamed up with the enemy. I just can't.
So do you have any inside info on what his motives are?
I feel like I'm trying to tease it out, because yes, I have been in communication with him and I don't want to like betray any confidences, but I'm trying to tease out his motives, and I feel like he's very torn between being personally betrayed and also protecting others. I feel like his personal betrayal is taking center stage more than his altruism for the community. But I don't know.
Is that what, like, we're going to get? Like, if we piss off Mike Norton, he's going to team up against us if we have litigation going on? Because that personally doesn't make me feel safe at all. That's
scary.
Horrible.
That's a scary thought.
Yeah, it is.
Okay, so there's a lot to do or a lot to deal with in him outright saying that he is working with Joseph Bishop's lawyer, and his entire expose and this 14-minute phone call was crafted for the sole purpose of destroying McKenna Denson's character. He said that explicitly. I will destroy your name. Your book will never happen. Your movie will never happen. Your own lawyer won't even talk to you. He said that himself. That is the explicit purpose of his entire expose. And the fact that he is colluding with the enemy, if we can call the church lawyer the enemy here, I think that might be a bit simplistic, but I think it is very, very, very revealing about Mike Norton himself and the way that we should understand Mike Norton's motivations and his own internal narrative. When he feels like he has been slighted against, the enemy of his enemy can now be his friend. We should always question when somebody is willing to walk down the path of intellectual mercenaryism, like Mike has done now. We should definitely always treat them with a little bit more apprehension in the community. And like I said, I'm going to continue reiterating this point. We should never have heroes. We're always going to be disappointed. That goes for Mike. That goes for McKenna. That goes for everybody on this panel. Nobody should be our heroes, because they will never live up to the standard that we create for them in our minds. So I want to share the perspective that everything that Mike shares in this video, everything that he proposed in the expose, 42 minutes, was news, but it wasn't, right? A lot of us within the community, especially the insider group of, like, especially content creators within the community who need to be on the upper level of knowledge of what's really going on in the community, aside from like the content consumers, a lot of us have had questions about McKenna Denson for months now. And a lot of us have really have been less comfortable about giving giving any of those questions just a full pass. And a lot of that spawned from the dossier that the church and Greg Bishop compiled and David Jordan compiled back in April that was created in the purpose of smearing her character, right? And smearing a person's character isn't at its level fallacious. That is not something that at its base is a fallacy to do. It is something that is practiced regularly in the court of law in order to impeach somebody's character. If you can propose enough evidence that somebody is not trustworthy, then you can't trust anything they say. And it shows that the combative and dualistic nature of our criminal justice system is not optimal. There are probably ways to do it better, but it's the system that we have. So with that said, everything that Mike proposes, it sounds like it's a revelation to him, and it sounds like it probably was, but many of us have known that these questions have been existing for quite some time. And, you know, that is a little bit troubling, right? But the thing is Mike has heard some of those things before, but he wouldn't allow himself to reconcile that information. Right? He was working with his own bias that McKenna Denson was his own personal friend. She'd stayed in his house. They had become very close in the work that they have done together. They have created surreptitious films together and posted them online. They have both gone trotting in, skipping with big smiles on, into Joseph Bishop's ward in order for Mike to film Joseph Bishop as she is up on the stand accusing him of raping her. Right? They're very close. Their work has so closely been intertwined for the past year that it's understandable that once Mike was able to allow his own mind to truly grasp this information, he feels angry and betrayed. That's abundantly clear. That's what happened here. And he's acting purely out of this very simplistic rage and not taking a step back and, you know, waiting and sitting. Like, if you're going to write an angry email or letter, you write it, then you sleep on it. Mike, you should have slept on this, man. Seriously, you should have slept on this. So the fact that he is working with the information compiled in the dossier, that was compiled by a lawyer working for the church who's making $400 an hour or whatever in order to compile this information to smear McKenna Dentz's character. It was created for the sole purpose of reducing her trustworthiness and credibility, and Mike Norton just finally allowed his mind to buy into it. It's not new, dude. You just allowed yourself to get to that point, and you reconciled the cognitive dissonance that's been living in your mind for months, or maybe even a year now. So now you're just dragging us all down with you into that self-eating sphere of cognitive dissonance. It's not good. It's not nice. It's not helpful. So I also want to add that the fact that Mike is now working with people that he so vehemently fought against for, you know, years and years and years, it's very, very troubling. And what it means is that Mike, dude, you played right into their deceptive hands. You making this expose video and coming out so viciously opposed to McKenna, that's exactly what the church wants to happen to our community. When all it takes is just a little bit of information to turn the community against itself and cause us to eat our own like this, you are aiding the enemy of our community, Mike. You're becoming a major source of the problem, being that of sowing discord among an already divisive community to begin with. And like we've said this before, but police reports when it comes to rape allegations are woefully inadequate, right? Police reports saying that they can't find evidence of something means absolutely fucking nothing, right? Police reports saying they couldn't find evidence that a sexual assault occurs means nothing. So whatever you think happened with all the police reports that the church attorney gave you that you briefly skimmed, I can guarantee whatever you think that happened, you're wrong. Whatever you think about McKenna's past is wrong. And I can guarantee that anything that all of us think about McKenna's past is wrong because it's not black and white. She is not a hero or a villain. She is a human being with her own personal apprehensions, her own personal flaws, her own personal motivations, and we need to understand her as a human being. We also need to understand Mike Norton as a human being who is acting out of rage and a sense of betrayal from one of his closest friends. The fact of the matter is, Mike, your expose of McKenna has become the single most divisive issue in this community for probably years, and that's because of your childish handling of this issue. And Mike, I like you. I appreciate what you do. I appreciate your ability to recognize when you fuck up and make corrections. You're a commendable dude in that regard, right? When you chose to go with filming a porn in the temple, you were met with immediate outrage and you said, oh, no, never mind. I'm not going to do that, right? You have the ability to correct when you're posed with new information, to correct your mindset. That is commendable. That is a good thing. When you chose to go into this issue with limited information, with information that has been propagandized for the sole purpose of smearing her character with your usual vitriol and anger, you made a choice that forever sowed doubt, anger, discord, and trauma into this community. This has truly been your greatest fuck up to date. If, Mike, if you would approach this with a sober and with an inquisitive perspective, asking pointed questions directly at McKenna instead of firebombing her character and never allowing her a chance to respond, I and everybody else in the community would have a lot more respect for you and your actions. So, Mike, call me. Dude, we need to talk about this because that screed that I scripted up for this, that only started at the 7-minute mark. There's still another half of this video that is disgusting that we need to discuss. Because at the 7 minutes, this is where Mike said that he didn't care if she committed suicide because that would be one less monster on the planet. That despicable line needs no comment. That was simply unacceptable. Then he goes on to say, I'm going to burn you to the fucking ground. Then he asks, do you have anything to say? Then he refuses to give her time to answer. Then she briefly talks over him and says, oh, I have nothing to say. And it reveals that she's gone into complete survival mode here. She is, if she does have dissociative identity disorder, she's dissociating. She is not responding at all to anything that is going on here. And then he says, you are a lying, pathological piece of shit, in my opinion. Show up at my house and I'll put a bullet between your fucking eyes. She tried to comment and then he continues berating her and then she retreats again. Then he says, good luck with your lawsuit, McKenna. I'll be there to testify against you. So not only will Mike assassinate your character publicly, but if the church ever has a lawsuit against you for something that you have a lawsuit against the church for, he'll stand up on the stand and testify against you. How does that make other victims and advocates in the community feel, Mike? What message did you send to everybody that is attached to this issue when you said that? That is fucking unconscionable, dude. Then he says, you're the worst person I've ever met, and I met people who've thrown toddlers downstairs. And then he says, anything else you want to say, you fucking piece of shit? And then she says, nope. And then he goes on for a literal 5 more minutes berating her without her getting a word in, talking about how much of a monster she is. Then he says, bring it on, you stupid fucking worthless bitch. Then he talked to many of the big names in the community, Sam Young, John DeLynn, Lindsay Hanson Park, and said that many of them suspected something like this for a long time. Yeah, Mike, you're late to the fucking party, bro. You were the one who refused to listen to this information and then just decided to make a big expose once you accepted it. You're the problem. You are part of the problem here. Then he says something that I think we'll pause after I say this to comment on this. But when McKenna talked, he pulled a quote from one of the police reports that had to relate to McKenna's one of the false cancer funds that she allegedly set up. And in this, she was quoted as saying, quote, I liked the love and attention I was getting and didn't want it to end, end quote. I think that line alone maybe revealing of a lot of things in McKenna's personal psychology and personal past that we should probably all deal with, that she said in response to these cancer, creating false cancer funds, she was receiving love and attention for it, and she didn't want that to stop. So I'll pass it back over to the panel before I finish and wrap up on the phone call.
I like a lot of what you had to say. I'm uncomfortable with a few aspects of it, and I do want to bring out the parts that I'm uncomfortable with. Some of what you said could, and you may not have meant it this way, or I don't know, but some of what you said could be interpreted as ends justify the means, very whose side are you on anyways kind of thing. My perception of what makes a social justice and advocacy movement great is when we stand on the side of truth. From that perspective, I think that we face the truth right between the eyes. We don't shy away from it, and we don't worry about how it impacts our bottom line. We trust that if we stand on the side of truth, even if we take a few knocks down in the process, that ultimately truth will prevail, and that justice will prevail with it. From that perspective, if bringing out the truth means acknowledging some things that knock our side down a few pegs and maybe amplify, quote unquote, their side up a few pegs, maybe it means testifying when the testimony is actually in support of a case that the LDS Church is making. I think what's most important isn't to stand on a side, it's to tell the truth and let it fall where it may. I think that is really important.
I agree. But that is the kernel of truth that he was saying. That was not the message that he sent. That's the more important point, I think.
I see that. Now, you mentioned that he's late to the game. Yeah, he's late to the game. However, so are the rest of us. And by the rest of us, what I mean is the ex-Mormon community, the activist community, the lay people that provide the bulk of the masses behind these causes, which ultimately, if activism is about awareness, it's our awareness, the masses. You talk about the content creators. That's not the masses. So I do believe that those who have to be ahead of the curve with what information's out there probably were hip to the game much faster than the rest of us. The rest of us missed it. The rest of us really missed it, right alongside Mike Norton. So while I'm not trying to justify the fact that he missed it, because he is in the content creator league, and he did have that cognitive dissonance with seeing what was real, because it clashed with the stance he had taken to that point. The point is, the message had not trickled down. The community had missed it. So in resolving his own cognitive dissonance, he brought us all along with him. I stand that he did a service and he did a good thing in bringing all of our awareness to the truth. And again, I'm coming from the perspective that we need to unequivocally, unapologetically stand on the side of truth, and we need to always maintain that when we stand by truth, even if it hurts us for a moment, it ultimately strengthens us. He did us a service by bringing the truth to the masses. Now, I am 150% with you on all the ways that his execution was terrible.
Right. It didn't have to go this way.
No. And particularly, I want to reinforce what you said about saying that she's worse than somebody who tortured children. Even I, like, when I saw that message, I'm like, what? No. What are you doing, Mike? No, this is not necessary. That's not true. And I want to acknowledge that what is most important is to get the truth out and to trust that even if it, and you spoke to this earlier in this podcast, that if even if it knocks us down for a second, we will come back stronger. I do believe that.
Let me just quickly respond. It didn't have to go down this way, right? And a lot of the problem of the content creators not wanting to talk about McKenna Denson, the questionable credibility of McKenna Denson in the past, has been because so many of the communities have heroized her. Mm. And if you speak out against or call into question her credibility from just somebody else who's a content creator in the community, you're very quickly the bad guy, which shows why the community, why many in the community have slowly distanced themselves from McKenna as opposed to making some big expose. But it comes down from Mike Norton's public character of being this firebrand, fuck the church kind of guy, you know, this stalwart white knight of truth. It comes down to him creating this big expose and going so hard against her for the rest of the community, for that information to not trickle down to the rest of the community, but explode into the community and consume the masses. it shouldn't have gone down this way. Yeah. But because we as people, as just our innate human desires of needing to have heroes, these simplistic cardboard cutout heroes in our minds, we need to have those heroes. Because of that, we didn't allow that negative information to penetrate our minds. So it could have happened differently. It didn't. The way that it did happen is disturbing and wrong. It's fucking wrong.
So I'm debating sharing this because it's a personal interaction. But I was actually in conversation with McKenna for the first time in quite a while, because we unfortunately had a negative interaction, and it kind of distanced myself from her a bit, just on a personal interaction. And I was finally coming around to wanting to support her again. And I was actually in communication with her about coming on Mormon Happy Hour, and we were going to discuss her most recent 3 attack allegations. And I was coming from it from the point of, like, not necessarily that I needed to believe her or not, but that if she felt strongly that this is something that she needed to pursue, then I was willing to hear her out. I appreciated in the article where she talked about the 3 allegations, and, you know, I can't say that the church is doing this to me, but the only way to protect myself is to go public. I was on board with that logic. And I guess the only reason I bring this up is because I feel like, you know, not to put myself above Mike Norton in any way or say that I held it, you know, handled it better, but, you know, I had a kind of a falling out, and I was coming back around to, you know, interacting with her again. And I really appreciate kind of the direction and the tone that we've all kind of curved this conversation, in that she may be guilty of some, all, who knows how many things, you know, in Mike's expose. Regardless, we need to come back to, what is the appropriate response to her? What is the appropriate way to treat her as a human being? Like, and so I like how we've kind of all come around to that. So I don't know where I was going with that rabbit trail of too much sharing. Janelle.
Yeah, no, I kind of feel like that's a good launching point to some of what I had to say. And I I'm thinking about the narrative as I've heard it, seen it play out in the communities on that topic. And so I'm thinking about, and I'm also reflecting back on a point that I think, Bryce, I'm pretty sure it was you who said this earlier about the love and concern she was receiving and not wanting that to end, and that we need to reckon with that as we think about how to move forward. I'm thinking about all of this. So, let's back up to her statement about her diagnosis. So one point I do want to make on that is that we don't know what her diagnosis is. We know what she said. Her credibility's been shot. I am not going to take her word for anything. So we know her statement to that effect. I don't think that means that we know what her diagnosis is, particularly given the context that she was naming it to get out of trouble. So again, there's a real credibility issue there. The second point I want to make is the difficulty with playing armchair psychologist. Given that we don't know her diagnosis, I am absolutely not going to take it upon myself to speculate as to what her diagnosis might be. That's not appropriate. However, it is very significant, the diagnoses that she named. Because they have now entered the public discussion, and they are affecting the community of people who are living with those diagnoses. I kind of want to focus on borderline personality disorder. That's one that I have a lot of familiarity with. I'm also seeing a lot of people reflecting on what that means that she named that. So I'm going to start with what's healthy, what's loving and compassionate, how do we contextualize that with the trauma that's in her past? Trauma absolutely is part of the trajectory of how a person develops borderline personality disorder. There is a lot of space for compassion for her, because all of this is very real. regardless of even if that's her correct diagnosis, but as we think about what it means about how to treat somebody who has a condition, we do need to be thinking about these things. And what I'm seeing is a lot of people coming from a good place who are basically saying, and I'm going to grossly oversimplify it, but basically to the effect of the disorder made her do it, or she couldn't help it. And I'm not sure anybody's put it quite that crudely, but that's my very gross summation of it. So I want to speak to that for a second, because I think that's a very dangerous fallacy. People with mental health diagnoses are able to make choices. They are able to be accountable. They're able to be moral, good people, and they are able to act on their moral on their morals. People live with trauma and don't have a lengthy history of crime and fraud. People live with borderline personality disorder and do not have a lengthy episode of crime and fraud. That needs to be said very clearly, because what I'm seeing is the community of people living with borderline personality being harmed by this narrative, because it's presuming an association between criminal behavior, immoral behavior, and having a mental health diagnosis, and that's a stigma, and it is not true, and it is not fair. So I think it's important to be clear on that. The second point is, okay, so we are looking at the context of what brought her to this point, and we can look at context without justifying or excusing or demonizing, and the context is very relevant, and does inform her path one way or the other to some extent, and we have to think about what is a healthy way to treat somebody with these problematic patterns? What's a compassionate and empathetic way to treat somebody with these problematic patterns? Certainly a lot of what we've seen is not that. Certainly Mike's phone call to her is not that. I am hearing a lot of people who think that we should give her a free pass, that we should excuse her, that we should let her off the hook because of these things. That is not good for her. That is not compassionate. Accountability is healthy. We need to fully, and we can do this without being judgmental, we can do this without being angry, we can do this without being punitive, but we need to always direct our attention back to the fact that to empower her to make healthy choices as she copes with her illness and her trauma. And we can do this. We can remind her that she is an agent and that she had the choice to make better choices in the past, and she has the choice to make better choices moving forward. I want to now pivot to the thing that Bryce highlighted, where she said about the love and care and concern that she didn't want to give up. I do think that's very relevant. And what that reminds me of, I'm going to speak to a moment for, and we won't go too far into this, but dialectical behavioral therapy, because it's been brought up numerous times in the discussion, because this is the treatment of choice for a person who has borderline personality disorder. One foundational concept in this is looking at reinforcers. We want to look at how the environment is reinforcing or negatively reinforcing certain behaviors. And what we want to do is create positive reinforcement for what we want to see more of, and we want to create negative or at least not reinforce what we want to see less of. I think about that when I see the love and care and concern that she didn't want to give up. So what we're seeing is that it was very reinforcing to her to present herself fraudulently as a cancer victim, and not just the money she was receiving was reinforcing, but the love and care and concern was reinforcing. So there's two sides to this. One is we don't need to be giving love and care and concern in rewarding fraud. We don't need to do that. But the flip side of it is we do want to reinforce by giving her a pathway to receive love and care and attention and concern and all those things that she wants in a healthy way. So that's the kind of duality of we don't need to be condemning her moral character as a person like we saw Mike do. We don't need to put this in, you're a horrible person and you'll never be anything but a horrible person. That's not true. That's not healthy. That's not compassionate. We do need to think very carefully about when she does certain things, what gets her the responses that are rewarding to her? When she does certain things, what gives her the responses that are not rewarding to her? And I say that because what I'm seeing a lot of is a narrative that we should reinforce her more now that we've seen that she's suffering. But if the way that we saw that she's suffering is in criminal behavior, fraudulent behavior, deceptive behavior, no, that is not the time to pour upon her more. Instead, what we want to do is say, this is what we really want from you. Please provide it. And that's how you can have your community back. That's how you can receive what you need.
Just being genuine and honest, I think is what it boils down to. Oh, yeah. Like, I don't want to prescribe like, hey, you need to act a certain way before we can love you. But just, I think being genuine and honest is what it boils down to. I'm sure you would.
And genuinely, we are feeling betrayed, and we can genuinely feel betrayed, and we don't need to be like, oh, we can't talk about our feelings of betrayal because she's suffering so much. No, we genuinely feel betrayed, and we can genuinely let her know this is not okay because you betrayed so many of us, and this is the harm you've caused, and that's not going to feel good, and that's genuine.
I would caution against, you know, as some of us here have trouble believing McKenna, all of a sudden believing what diagnosis she has. So, like, have you seen her as a clinician or talked to her in any capacity as that? No, I don't think anyone has. So I would caution chasing that down the rabbit hole, you know, when that's probably not so ethical to do, at least.
I just want to interject that I agree with you. I want to make sure I was understood there. I agree with you. We don't know what her diagnosis is, and it's not appropriate to speculate. So I agree with you on that.
Right. And I mean, everybody has motives and reinforcers for why they do anything. It's not a mentally ill or mentally well person that responds to those things or doesn't. You know, we all do. So yes, if we can, you know, if we want to read between the lines and say, does she like the love and attention that she was getting and she didn't want it to end, you know, certainly Mike, who had that information, who called her up and said she's a worthless piece of shit, was not responding in any sort of trauma-informed way at all. If you know that a person has a propensity to, you know, and if you believe that to carry out, you know, whatever she was doing with the cancer fund, and you had any inkling of motives of why, of trauma that could have caused that, or a mental illness, or anything like that, you would never call up somebody and verbally abuse them in the way that he did. I mean, that is just irresponsible. And you know, that could be damaging. It could have been damaging. You know, and it's just separating, it's hard because I'm a little close to the situation, so separating what I know and what I want to share and what I can share, I just think that was extremely grievous. And thank you, Bryce, for being the man to stand up and say that is not okay. You know, I would personally like to hear from the other men that Mike listed as knowing about all of these things behind the scenes. Because I also feel like there's an irresponsibility that lies with them, you know, to let Mike sort of sensationalize this. And I know I've said that before. You know, the whole handling of it has just really, really disturbed me. It is indicative that we are reinforcing the patterns of patriarchy and we're still not recognizing it at all. So yeah, I wanted to speak to that a little bit. The other thing is, you know, that is one thing that I'm very glad that the conversation has sparked of, and this is outside the situation of McKenna personally, but the situation, and this is something that I've had to think about and struggle with, but where is the line drawn? If someone has a mental illness, if someone is struggling with mental health challenges, where is the line drawing between accountability for their behavior? Now, it's the position of the National Alliance on Mental Illness that, you know, if somebody commits a crime when they are mentally ill, that they go through a restorative reparative process instead of being criminally punished. And we are seeing that more and more in the US. We're seeing mental health courts, we're seeing substance use courts. In fact, the term substance abuse has been changed in the state of Virginia to say substance use. It's more trauma informed. It's handled with a more compassionate eye. And
isn't that how the entire criminal justice system should work?
Exactly.
Okay. And just curious. Thank right. you.
And so, and you know, this is, it is a problem. It's a problem in our nation. And my professional affiliations are such that I, you know, have a close relationship to kind of what's going on. But, you know, I think that that's an important conversation to have, because I think it might apply here. I don't know if it does. I don't know if I want to even make a judgment call, as a responsible professional to say that it applies here, but yeah, a conversation about mental illness and accountability, you know, where is that line? I find value in that. I think that there's a lot of value in that. And I'm appreciative that the community is talking about those things. There were other things I think that were disturbing on the phone call. The threat with the gun. Gun violence is very real. That's very triggering. In our community of progressivism and liberalism, I would say, in the post-Mormon world, that has been pricking people the wrong way. there's so many things, really. And are we judging Mike Norton? You know, are we saying, oh, because Mike exhibited abusive behavior on this phone call for 14 minutes where he completely berated this woman, you know, is he a domestic abuser now? I mean, are we going to apply this situation, very real situation of what he has showed us personally, he has the ability to do as a person? Are we going to use his actions that he has shown us, and are we going to apply that to his credibility? I mean, are we going to judge him? Let's talk about excommunicating predators. You know, here's someone who verbally abused a woman. I mean, why not? You know, like, I'll tell you why. Because patriarchy is alive and well. That's why.
No, and it's not. I mean, yes, patriarchy is alive and well, but that's not why. The reason why is because 14 minutes of verbal abuse is not equivalent to the decades of crimes that McKenna has committed. That's why there's a difference.
Allegations and crimes in your opinion. And nobody deserves abuse. I don't care what the person has done. Nobody deserves.
No, I condemn what he did. Everybody can come to their own conclusion about the evidence presented against McKenna. However, the allegations against her are way lengthier than 14 minutes of ugliness on a phone call.
So what you have just done is you have permitted a man to have an excuse to verbally abuse, berate, demean, minimize, deny, rationalize verbal abuse against a woman. By saying that, that's what you have done.
No,
and that is not okay.
Because
hang on, I think this is a really good point where maybe we should kind of correct course and say maybe we can all speculate and take a turn. With the information and maybe the feelings and the sense of betrayal that Mike, like, if we put ourselves in Mike's position, or maybe not Mike, make up something else, in your position, if you felt the way that he did in towards McKenna, and you came across this information of her past and these police reports and documents talking about alleged crimes that she had committed, especially those in terms of scams and fraud and things like that, what would be the more appropriate way that we would alert a community that we see potentially she may be taking advantage of? What would be the thing that would be right? And I think we're all going to have different opinions and different answers, but I think it's worth exploring. What could we have done differently?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of people. Jacqueline Orton's Facebook post was very helpful. Lindsay Hanson Parks, I think, had value. Radio Free Mormon, I think his Facebook post on the whole situation was helpful. You know, I don't think it's helpful to co-opt it and sensationalize it. Like, that's what I don't think is helpful here. And then I don't think it's also helpful to use that information and things that he, you know, thinks he knows or formed his opinion, you know, without maybe getting her side of the story or without looking at the backstory or searching for any other explanation and snap judging her on her past, something that the church has put together, which, by the way, David Jordan has a history of defending the church in the Navajo sex abuse cases. So, you know, if we want to talk about racism, here we go. Like, it's just the cognitive dissonance here is if it wasn't so sad, it would be shocking. But it's so sad to me. It's just sad.
Can you talk about some of the things in Radio Free Mormon and Lindsay Hansen Jacqueline. Park and I don't know the other woman. Can you talk about some of the things that you saw as beneficial in those posts so that those who haven't seen them can understand?
Yeah. So, I have been in touch with McKenna since I met her over a year ago. I would say pretty regularly. And we've seen each other at events. I've spoken to her on the phone. I participated with her in events and advocacy things. And I think that a lot of people speak to that is that people who have spoken to her personally can attest to generally their feeling that she is a good person, that she has motives, that maybe she struggles with trauma, that she is authentic, that she comes off as genuine, that she doesn't appear to be evasive, and a lot of the posts that I was seeing, particularly the Radio Free Mormons, was along those lines. A few other things that I was seeing, were really the community, the criticism of the community, criticism of us to, have to take this victim survivor and boost her up as the face of Mormon Me Too and, expect her to behave in a way that can be credible enough for people to hear the cause and believe the cause. She didn't ask for that. I would push back on that and say that is a huge responsibility that yes, maybe she was amenable to doing, but anyone that was kind of and has worked in this space knows that it's problematic to have just one face for any movement. I mean, it's not anyone's movement. And in fact, some of the moderators of Mormon Me Too of the Facebook group, like we're having a discussion that, that really was never a vision and that there are many faceless people who will never come forward and who cannot come forward because of dossiers that might be compiled to them that, some ex-Mormon grabs a hold of and, completely destroys their life on Facebook. They will never come forward because of that. That makes me very sad. And people will snap judge them for things in their past, which also makes me very sad. So Lindsay Hansen Park, I think hers, was very in line with her usual response, which is the community holding up these false heroes and just being disappointed when they're not true. And there's a saying that goes, and I know they shared this here before, but Mormons are black and white people. They tend to think in very black and white terms. And then ex-Mormons or progressive Mormons or, people who consider themselves woke enough, they just flip that around. They're white and black people, so they think in white and black terms. On the other side, you have people thinking in black and white terms. And it's these dichotomies, it's these binary thinking, and it might be flipped on both sides, but it still so much exists on both sides. It exists so much, that here we are, we have I'm trying to think of all the men that knew, and kept this hidden, in the ex-Mormon community, maybe 3 or 4 people, but we're failing to have any accountability for them. I mean, isn't that indicative of the leaders of the church knowing about things and just keeping things hidden? And to me, I'm like, this is a problem. It's a problem in our community that we're not, able to really change our patterns and change the things that we're reinforcing over and over and over again to get to a more healthier place, a place where, women are not slut shamed for giving oral sex on their, whatever Mike said in his video. I mean, to me, I'm like, that has no bearing. And as a rape survivor, that is horrific also to me. Like there are so many things, And the fact that he would do all of these things and we're not questioning Mike's credibility, But instead, we're just believing whatever he says and saying that McKenna has the credibility problem. And, you know, by the way, I feel like people who have been close to McKenna, there has been concerns. Okay, you can't interact with McKenna and not realize that McKenna's going to do what McKenna's going to do. And the sooner you realize that, and you can set whatever boundaries you want, and that's what most people end up doing. You know, most people that I've talked to said, yeah, you know, I just became uncomfortable with that, so I'm not going to do this anymore. Or, yeah, I was asked too many times for money, so I'm not going to donate anymore. You know, that's what many people have been doing for a long time already. And so all of a sudden it's like this huge revelation that we have to go crucify this woman, you know, and say that she's like committing a fraud when people have already set their own boundaries. Like, why can't we all do that? Why can't we all set our own boundaries? You know, why does it have to be that we have to publicly exile and pattern our ways of excommunication that we are reinforcing the church in our own ex-Mormon community? You know, why do we have to bring that mentality here? It just seems so harmful to me.
I just wanted to clarify before you said that there's men sitting on this information. What did you mean by that? Should they have done something different?
Yeah. I mean, isn't John DeLynn a therapist? I mean, isn't he a PhD and whatever? Like, I think that, you know, to me, I don't know if he knew of Mike's plan, or maybe, you know, to me, he has a very large mantle. I think that he could have used that in a more healthy and productive way to have these conversations. You know, maybe talk to McKenna, maybe get information like apparently only I have tried to do. I think that maybe that could have been done here, you know, and that goes back so many times with other issues. Like, we see this with other issues. We see that men just have a really hard time holding other men accountable in our group and in our community.
Okay.
I want to agree with something you said, which is quite a while back, actually. I think you described Mike as commandeering and sensationalizing in his phone call. He absolutely did that. And to speak to Colleen's question about what would have been a more healthy way to approach this, it represents a very missed opportunity that he did that, because instead of focusing on, again, my soapbox of the truth needs to prevail and we need to highlight the truth and bring that out. Instead, he turned it all on himself and he made it all about his personal grievance, and not just his personal grievance, but also his anger and his own vindication in getting his own emotional satisfaction for how he feels himself to be wronged, which is quite self-centered, because while he has been wronged, the important factor here in the perspective would be that it's about how he's harmed the community, how she's harmed the community. And I want to highlight a few things about that, which I feel would have had a chance to come out better if he had not turned all spotlights on himself. We've spoken quite a bit about how this affects the ability of rape victims to come forward and be believed, because that has been drastically harmed. She keeps inventing alleged attackers who are always Black men. What is that about? She's not only that, but she's specifically directing police to go seek out Black men who she has accused of assailing a white woman, which leans so hard into a racist trope, which is the Black man is the threat to the white woman's virtue and purity and safety, which we have a really long history in this country of violence towards people of color, and particularly Black men, in the defense of the virtue and the safety of white women. And the fact that she would lean into that trope with her false allegations is horrific and damaging. There are real victims in the wake of that. The cancer fund, the fact that her ability to that posing as a cancer victim and soliciting funds, that's money directly from the people who have cancer and need it for treatment to live, it also impacts the ability of those same donors moving forward to feel so generous towards other cancer funds in the future, which they might have otherwise been inclined to donate to. We're taking money away from the medical funds of people who are trying to survive cancer. So this could have come to the forefront if in the way that this had been proceeded forward, if Mike had allowed it to. But he didn't. He missed that big picture perspective. He didn't see that this is where the focus needs to be. Instead, he felt his own personal suffering and his own personal grievance was the story, and it's not. And that level of self-centeredness created a lot of damage. And I do think we need to always pivot back to that focus. It's not about him. It's not about her. It's not even about the ex-Mormon community. It's about the people, the vulnerable people who we are here to protect. And the more vulnerable and the more oppressed the population is, the more they need to be made front and center focus in this movement. And that is not McKenna, and that is certainly not Mike Norton.
I want to kind of resonate with a few things that have been said and also add some further context that hasn't been discussed yet that I think is very, very revealing of where Mike is coming from in all of this. I agree to such an extreme extent that a lot of this has come from Mike creating this to be about him. Right. And the 14 minute phone call is 14 minutes of him directing and absorbing every bit of information into his own narrative as something for or against him as a figurehead of the ex-Mormon movement, which is very problematic to begin with. Him using verbal abuse for 14 minutes straight against McKenna Denson. Let's just say Mike was way the fuck out of line with this. That was truly unacceptable. But what I found far more unacceptable that disturbed me to my deepest roots was in the 42-minute expose, he went so far as to apologize to Joseph Bishop for his actions towards Joseph Bishop. That made me profoundly uncomfortable because the allegations against Joseph Bishop still stand. McKenna Denson, the allegations that she has raised against Joseph Bishop, they still stand. The unnamed other two women who have spoken out on about Joseph Bishop, their allegations still stand. There's a lot of corroborating information here that Joseph Bishop is a sexual predator, and Mike chose to apologize to Joseph Bishop for his own conduct towards him. That means that Mike is willing to apologize to a sexual predator about his own actions before he was willing to even hear out his own friend's reasons behind this information that he's recently discovered about her. I think that very much so, like Leslie, like you said, that speaks to the patriarchy of this, right? That speaks to this is a dude, there's another dude. It's these very subconscious perspectives that we all hold, that this is another dude that I can trust. This is another dude that he has been a victim of these false allegations that McKenna has made. And now I'm the butt of the joke because McKenna lied to me and I believed her. So therefore he and I are on the same side and I better apologize to him because I went and chased him down outside a law office and held up a microphone to his face. Right, like that was completely out of line as well, because that and it's unjustifiable, right? The locus of immoral actions here lie on Joseph Bishop, the sexual predator, the self-admitted sexual predator. And that's something that has been so completely lost in this conversation because everything that we've been discussing about this has been McKenna Denson's credibility and Mike Norton's public figure as a person in this movement, and how this has hurt his reputation, how his own actions have tarnished his reputation in the community. This should not be about these two people. This should be about the church covering up sex abuse and sexual predators in their own ranks. And the guy that started all of this, at the center of all of it, Joseph goddamn Bishop. He is the canary in the coal mine. He's in his late 80s, right? He's the soon-to-be dead canary in the coal mine that reveals that the church has a huge problem right now. And all of this bullshit that we're talking about with McKenson and Mike Norton right now is just subterfuge. It's distracting us as a community when we need to be focused. We need to be paying attention to the issues that really matter. Instead, we're bickering about who is trustworthy and who we should side with. It's all wrong. And this is all a result of Mike Norton making a big expose and it currently having 20,000 views on YouTube. Big fucking deal, right? It has completely distracted us. It has completely torn apart this community for a brief moment when that is not what this community needs. And it plays into the strengths of the church. Unacceptable. And this is all a result of Mike Norton's actions. Mike Norton is responsible for these things. Sure, we can say McKenna Denson is responsible because she has made some false allegations and Mike Norton just responded to those. No. This is all on Mike Norton's shoulders. This is because of Mike. This is because he handled this situation in a childish and anger-filled way, and it could have been handled so much better. And it's on the hands of everybody who knew something that McKenna Denson is going to do what McKenna Denson does, as you said, Leslie. It's a result of all of us staying silent when maybe we should have said something early on. It's a culmination of all of these things. It's just tragic to watch it all happen and melt down like this. And the way that it all melt down, it's all because of Mike. Mike should not have done that. Mike, you fucked up, dude. You have caused irreparable harm.
So Bryce, how would you have handled it? Do you have any recommendations of how, if you felt like you were in a situation similar to Mike Norton and found an individual who you felt was taking advantage of the community, how do you think the best way to handle that information would have been?
Yeah, I'll just take a quick example from the very end of the phone call to illustrate what I would do differently. And this right here, everything that we've been discussing today is, this is mostly why I very rarely work within the activist sphere of ex-Mormonism and the post-Mormon community, because it's very heated and oftentimes there are issues that require shades of gray to understand that we all see in terms of black and white that just, it devolves into these Ouroboros of the community eating itself, and it's stupid in my opinion, and it's too time consuming and effort consuming. That's why I work in Mormon history, because that's much less controversial, right? So the very end of the phone call, and once again, trigger warning, if you don't want to hear this, skip to when I'm done talking, but these are a couple points that Mike said, and I want to talk about them and say what I would have done differently if this is the only point in the phone call that we'd be talking about. He says, "You are so full of shit. You are a fucking monster. I hope you rot in fucking hell." And comes at the end of 5 straight minutes of yelling and cussing at McKenna, right? Then he says, "Anything you want to say to them, you want to take ownership, start apologizing right now, you piece of shit." Then she responds with, "I'm good." Then he says, No, you won't apologize to everybody you lied to. You don't want to apologize to the 5 men you accused of rape. You don't want to apologize to David, who was prosecuted and acquitted of rape. And that right there reveals the entire perspective of this phone call. It was accusations. It was straight up accusations. Mike wasn't seeking information in this phone call. He wasn't going to change his mind as a result of anything she said. There was nothing McKenna could have done to dull the sharp point of Mike's dagger he was thrusting in her back throughout this 14-minute phone call. There was nothing she could have done. This was a fucking assault, a verbal assault on McKenna, and she had no way out other than to just, nope, I'm good. okay, I'm sorry you feel that way, and just go in complete defensive curl mode. That is completely a fault of Mike. So instead of, you know, blatantly accusing her for 13 minutes straight and then ending those accusations with saying, anything you want to say, you want to apologize, you want to take ownership, maybe saying at the beginning of the phone call, hey, I've come into contact with some information that I really need to understand. Can you please help me understand these points? I've been speaking with Joseph Bishop's attorney, and he's revealed some information to me as part of the dossier and some, you know, later information that's been collected that is very, very troubling. I need to understand these things if we're going to continue to be friends and allies in this community in effecting change in the church. Maybe a conversation could have been had at that point. You know, I don't know how McKenna would have reacted to that, but I have to think that it would have been more productive than Mike swearing and yelling at her for 10 minutes straight. So there were many, many ways this could have been handled correctly. There were many more ways this could have been handled incorrectly. It was handled in the most incorrect way. That was very problematic. And also the final thing that that Mike said, he said, I swear to God, I am your worst fucking nightmare. Count on it, bitch. And what I want to say to Mike about that is, if you continue to act this way in this childish anger and wearing your emotions on your shirt sleeve, the whole ex-Mormon community will turn on you and will become your worst fucking nightmare. You count on it, bitch. You understand, Mike? Do you understand that you stepped out of line? Do you understand that your conduct is completely unacceptable? And hey, you know, if that can be my only takeaway, is the token penis of this panel is calling out Mike Norton and being an asshole to an asshole. You know what? I'm comfortable with that.
I think it's appropriate. I'm fine with it. I think that Mike is of the character that he will respond in. And I have faith in you, Mike. I mean, he's demonstrated himself to, you know, turn around in the face of constructive criticism or criticism in the past.
Well, and I call him chaotic good, like, because he's a good guy. He's usually moral. He's just the fucking wild card. He just does what he's gonna do, right? But he at least has the cognizance and the moral compass to correct his actions. And for that very reason, I want Mike to call me. I want to have a constructive conversation with Mike so as to not, you know, to inform him of where, you know, people in the community and fellow content creators see his actions as having their effects. So please call me, dude.
And I will say my experience with Mike has been, there's been a number of times that I've called him out. The vast majority of times he's expressed appreciation for it. Usually he's responded to me directly and he's thanked me for my perspective. Many times he's agreed with me and or shown a sense of humor about me highlighting a flaw of his. He's done that pretty consistently over time. The other thing what I've observed of him is that he has a pretty strong and consistent internal concept of what his moral code is. I would call that integrity, because he's very consistent to it, and he's very transparent with it. So there's tons of room, and we've taken all that room to explore all the flaws with it too, and all the places where there are lacking and big holes and blind spots, which also exist. What I have seen is that he acts according to his own moral code and his own sense of integrity. He has shown some responsiveness to being willing to see his blind spots when they're called to his attention. At other times he has not. But he at least is acting to the best of his conscience as he understands it. I do say that because I have seen some discussion, and maybe it's more on the Mormon side, I don't know, stating that he has no integrity, he has no conscience. There are many flaws that he's guilty of. We've gone into a lot of them and they are real. I don't think that's one of them. So I'm just going to throw that out there just for the sake of balance, because we have exhaustively gotten into a lot of what's wrong. So.
Amen. Leslie.
Well, just closing it out, you know, I think there is validity to to considering how behavior within the movement and with each of the individual actors or players comes across to the audience that we hope to speak to. You know, there, I have heard some of those concerns. I have heard that maybe some of McKenna's mannerisms or behaviors may not be the best to speak to a Mormon audience, you know, and if we want Mormon audience to hear us and, you know, feel like the movement is credible and safe for them. So, you know, I think that, like I said, I don't have any interest in taking sides or anything like that. And I just want to validate completely that I have heard those things. I have grappled with some of those things myself. And validate that, you know, advocacy, I feel like is just so difficult because people who are advocates are usually coming from a place of trauma and hurt and pain. And they may have moved into a space where they feel like they can help other people. And then for whatever reason, some find themselves very triggered and traumatized and, you know, behaviors come out that maybe aren't so healthy and indicative of that past trauma. So, you know, that's how I've kind of framed a lot of this over the past however many weeks or months, you know, that these issues have kind of been floating around. And personally, you know, I framed it in a way that I feel like is healthy for me. And yeah, I think going back to what was said here is definitely the community of ex-Mormonism, the community that, you know, is supportive of Me Too and Mormon Me Too and victims and survivors, the community of Mormonism as a whole, all of these different sub-communities even that are touched, you know, by this issue. I really, really hope and just want to reiterate the fact that growing pains, and I would characterize this as a growing pains do help. You know, growing pains do strengthen communities. And we would not be strong if we didn't have to grapple with serious and difficult and really, really messy issues. And that's what this is. It's totally messy. And nobody has the right or wrong answer. And everyone can make their judgments. But, you know, I think that how the community handles it as a whole and our response to it and deciding, you know, really, do we want to be responsible and healthy and reject the patterns that have been reinforced in our upbringing, in our Mormon upbringing? Or do we want to change the script? You know, do we want to handle it in a healthy way? So that would be my two cents.
Thank you, Leslie. Janelle, did you have anything you wanted to say in conclusion?
No, not really. I think it's been covered to exhausting. I guess I just hope we can take a as broad a perspective as possible. These movements are not defined by individuals. It's very, very easy to get caught up in the drama in a feud between two public figures. And to the extent that we do that, we're really missing the point. I think we've all spoken to that. Lindsay Hanson Park spoke to that, and that's been mentioned prior as well. But she did a really good job of it. I just hope that the concluding thoughts that we can take away from this is how can we do better for the people who need us? How can we make spaces safer for those who are vulnerable, both in and out of the Mormon Church? How can we create a context in which women are believed, even in the face of this strike to the credibility of one of our forefront for runners? How can we build that into improving our movement so that we don't at least create the perception that our credibility depends on the credibility of anybody who leads the movement? Because that's a fallacy and that doesn't need to be. How can we bring more voices to the forefront and create more balance in how we keep our focus on the people we're serving rather than letting it get into the infighting between public figures? Because that is not the point. So I guess that's my concluding thought.
I love that. Thank you. Thank you so much. Bryce, did you have anything more you wanted to share from the penis gallery over there?
that's a nickname for my phone, actually. Okay, so before we started, we drafted up the high-level issues that we wanted to come back to if we found ourselves digressing too much. But I think every single thing that we said in this conversation has been so tightly intertwined with all of these points that I just want to use our high-level issue bullet points here to summarize everything that we've discussed today, because I think it's important to kind of try and rewind and try and understand that within the purview of why we even, you know, put together this panel in the first place. First point, mental health and the need for a safety net in the world. We have a dramatically under-informed perspective of mental health and what that is. And there are no safety nets for people who are experiencing mental health issues. And the safety nets that do exist are largely for more people with more affluence and more wealth. And the fact of the matter is that if we understand McKenna Denson is that she never came from wealth. She always has been scraping by for most of her life and some of her mental illness. We can make, this is armchair stuff and it probably is wrong, but the trauma that she's experienced in her past has informed her conduct and created her mindset to do and to justify what she has done today and throughout her entire life. And some of that has been a result of, we just don't have a social safety net for people who have experienced trauma and now suffer mental illness from that. And anytime that we work towards creating those social safety nets, the less we're going to run into issues like this. We need to understand how the community is handling this and try and understand all of the nuance. It's very messy. Like you said, Leslie, this is a messy issue. There's a lot of nuance. There's a lot that we need to understand in all of this. We need to be skeptical about all of this. We need to skepticize everything. And the more skepticism that we can introduce in this, the more that we can disconnect our own biases and perspectives from this, the better we're going to be off. Don't crucify people in the community. Even if you really, truly believe that they deserve being crucified, like Mike Norton believes, McKenna needs to be burned at the fucking stake, like he said. Something that you said, Leslie, in our pre-show discussion was, when bias is presented as fact, it's problematic and we're never learning from it. That's very problematic as well. And that speaks to the point of being skeptical. Another point, many of us are feeling betrayed. You know, a lot of us are feeling anger as a result of all of these new, revelations, I put in quotes again. So McKenna's actions may impact how victims operate in the future, and that's largely as a result of New Name Noah's actions as a result of all of this. This may scare people off, and that's going to harm the community in irreparable ways. Negative attributional bias, that's obviously abundantly clear. That's been going on for a while among all of us. And the more that we can strip that away, the more skeptical we're going to be and the more we're going to be able to deal with new information and adapt to that information. Good things have come as a result of her actions, even if the motivations are bad. Leslie, you said you call this growing pains. Yeah, that's a good way of looking at it. Like, the community is going to get past this. And I hope that all of us on the panel have spoken to the point that in the long run, this is going to make the community, more robust and more critical and more effective. But these growing pains are going to hurt for a long damn time. We got a lot of stress fractures that we have to heal from before we can, we can really become stronger as a community. So we all need to work on this, all of us. Don't have heroes. You're always going to be disappointed. That speaks for itself. also don't ever get sick when, you know, some kind of big panel or big issue is going to come out like this, because then it makes it terrible when you're going onto a podcast panel. Strep throat doesn't give a shit about what comes out of the ex-Mormon sphere.
Oh my gosh. Take your antibiotics. I hope you're on them. Really? Oh God.
Anyway, we'll not speak to that. And then all, as a result of all of this, regardless of this whole meltdown, please keep our eyes focused on the goal. The central issue that brings everything together, that brings New Name Noah and McKenna Denson and all of us together, is that the church has a problem with sex abuse and covering it up. That is what started all of this. And those problems still exist. Drama is going to happen. Drama is going to push us one way or another. There's a lot to talk about. There's a lot of opinions that we all have about each other and about the community. Sure, those are important. What's truly important here is that the church covers up for sexual predators. That is unacceptable. That is our goal to change. And until that changes, we need to get past this bullshit problems that we have with each other. So that's my final conclusion.
Thanks. That's wonderful. Sum up.
Thank you. So I feel like what's happening, I just keep wanting to say this, is I feel like we have two wild cards that have collided, and they are definitely public figures. And so we're all trying to just kind of weed ourselves, get out of the weeds and figure out like, what the fuck just happened? Because, you know, an atomic bomb just went off. And I really have to admit that, well, first of all, I would hate to have someone talk for 3 hours about me on a podcast. That would be devastating. So I'm just going to put that out there and say I have compassion for the people that we're discussing here. So I hope that that translates, hopefully, to constructive discussions about how things can be better for our community and for these individuals also. And I have to admit that I think I've done like quite a substantial degree turn on how I was feeling towards McKenna when we started this conversation. I went from a place of some pretty intense pain and frustration with how I saw her conducting herself publicly, to, you know, because I was speaking from a survivor standpoint, and I felt that there was damage being done. But I think that, thank you so much for, you know, especially Leslie and Janelle, for, you know, your possibly heated at points discussion really actually helped me kind of wrap my brains around, you know, teasing out where I really, really felt. And I think I went from like never wanting to talk to McKenna again to now I really have a lot more compassion, you know, on where she's coming from, and also how she's been treated in this, and how it could have gone so much differently and better for her and for everyone. Yeah. So thank you so much for all of your perspectives. I really, really appreciate it. I just think we all have lots to learn moving forward, and hopefully we can kind of, as a community, like we've all talked about, learn and grow and be better. And thank you so much, all three of you, I guess I'm the fourth one, for being willing to devote so much time to this painful topic. So thank you for sticking through, and hopefully nobody's else's bladder has exploded by now. So
are you gonna roll this out all as one? Like 1 3 yeah. hour? Oh my gosh. Do you think people
I don't know.
I think it should. Totally.
Our poor listeners.
I've had people tell me already they will.
Speaking of John DeLynn.
Good thing you got that Zoom subscription.
Time. Yep. Yeah, I knew we'd never last. I'd be like, okay, start over. Like every 40-minute block, like we'd be times, here forever. Yeah. Right?
Could not do this again. Nope. No do-overs, like you said.
The next time something explodes in our community, I'm passing it on to someone else. La, 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 la.
I think that's my
entire MO in Mormon activism. That's like, a shitstorm coming. I'm just going to get my umbrella real quick.
I do feel like it'll give people a really good context. Like,
I hope so.
Yeah, no matter what opinions they hold, we've spoken to all of them, you know, and I feel like it'll give people a really good context, but also hear the other side too, you know?
Yeah,
So yeah, I think that's healthy. Good.
And Colleen, thank you for putting this panel together.
Yeah, you're brave. You're awesome.
Like, really, for sure.
You go, I'm only as brave as you guys are. I can't do this without you.
I almost flaked out.
I'm so glad. I mean, I wanted to cancel. We all three of us canceled yesterday. So, and then Janelle came on, and I'm like, "Woo! Okay, we got more fresh blood."
Yeah. This was your what is it? The first, like, your virgin podcast, or
my virgin podcast? Yeah. I've never done this before, so you're in right.
We popped a cherry.
Go down in history. Yep.
Glad I could be.
This was a rough one.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, sorry. It was a rough one. Usually we're not this argumentative, but you know.
So.
Yeah. I mean, well, yeah, Janelle, you kind of dove into the shark tank coming in here, right? With like arterial bleeding. I mean, this is such a heated issue. We're all very opinionated. And you're like, this will be my first podcast. It'll be fun, right? Right, guys?
I appreciate every one of your passion. I appreciate that we really have spoken thoroughly to all the perspectives, as we've said. And I hope that there's nothing but the best of feelings standing here. Like, Leslie, I appreciate your passion. Yes. Even at the point where we went head-to-head, it was important that you spoke to the points that you spoke to. And it was important, Bryce, that you made the points that you needed to make. And I hope that I was able to provide a balance and speak to some points that I find important. And I really think that's very positive, and I love it. So I hope we all.
Yeah, I think.
Just,
I mean,
your Twitter feed.
I know. Yeah, I think discussions like this are healthy, you know.
Yeah.
And you can leave it. I mean, you can leave it in the discussion space.
Yes.
You know. So.
Yeah. I appreciate you all. So.
Yes.
Likewise.
Okay. I'm not gonna run into her. I'm still here. I'd love to be again.
So. I'm so glad it's over.
God, next time we're going to pick a better topic, right?
Please. Yes,
we
please.
We always say that, and then we never do. So we need to do it.
Communities, it just goes like this. It just, there's always something else right? coming out. So yeah. We can never get ahead of it.
True.
Yeah.
Let's all compile our favorite Mormon sex myths next time.
Oh, God. Oh, that'd be fun. Please. That'd be fun.
See, now we're talking.
Yes.
Soaking. All right. I can say is soaking. Okay. Yeah. Moving right along.
Soaking is fundamental.
Here is a happy note.
And that wraps up today's topics. We are so glad you stopped by. Be sure to join the Mormon Happy Hour on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Patreon. If you smiled, please drop us a 5-star review wherever you found us. See you next week. Cheers.
I haven't told anyone this. I threw out my garments like 2 weeks ago.
Go to you.
Congratulations.
I didn't burn them. I didn't. I didn't do anything that I was. I just threw them away.
Okay. You're free.
I don't even remember what I did.
I know.
It took me years to get rid of them.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's been years. They were sitting on the top of my closet, and they were, you know, I had, like, new packages, even, mm-hmm. and then some really old of the silky kind, because you can't buy those anymore, and they were short, and so I could wear my shorts with them, and they would ride up, you know, uh-huh. and so I'd wear my shorter uh-huh. stuff, and I was like, yeah, mm-hmm. it took me a long time to really be like, I'm done. Like, I'm never going to wear these again.
Congratulations.
It took me so many years. Have I told you guys, I don't know if I've aired this on public air, it took me, I was sleeping and living with my boyfriend, who was a never Mormon, for a year wearing them.
Wow.
That's how fucked up in my head was.
Wow.
Yeah, and we've all been there, so or someplace comparable. So I'm actually not endowed, but I can recall holding to things in the face of and people being very patient with me. So in the interest of our listeners who have, if they've made it this far, bless you all. But I think I'm in a later time zone than all of you. I am going to sign off. I've had a lot of fun. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Bye.
Okay. Goodbye.
Bye.
Are you putting that part in about my garments?
I can take it out if you want me to.
Oh, and I guess it doesn't really. Well, it doesn't really matter.
I mean, it's kind of funny.
Yeah.
It's kind of awesome.
Okay.
It's kind of awesome. I mean, it really speaks to the dysfunction we all experience and the, mm-hmm. the journey that it is.
Yeah.
It's a big
and like the, right. And the little tricks that we all used. Like here we are mm-hmm. being oppressed, you know, with this special underwear. And then but using little tricks to kind of get around the oppression in any way that we can. Let's get around the boundary.
Like, they always talk about, like, oh, you have to wear your bra over it. And I was like, I always wore my bra over it because then I could yank it down below my bra. And then it wasn't, like, yeah. sticking up.
Then yeah, because then like, you could show, like, a little bit of cleavage. Yeah, right, right. Totally. Yeah.
I'm like, I'm still wearing my garments. They're just way down here.
Yeah. I had to get the ones with the cutouts, though, with the, like, boob cutouts, you know?
Is that a thing?
Yeah, the like pockets.
Yeah, like had pockets I can't wear the t-shirt ones. Like, what? I can't wear a bra over that. Like, what? Who does that? Who can do that?
Yeah, I tried once at the very beginning to wear it. I wore my bra first, and then I put my garments on top of it twice, I thought that was, like, 2 days in a row. Bad.
I did not know you could do that.
They would ride up, and then like I would have garments around my neck, and I'd look down and be like, "Oh my god!" Because like they wouldn't stay put, and they just like travel up, and they'd be around my neck, horrifying. Because I wouldn't feel it, and then I look down, and there's my garments falling out of the top of my shirt. Oh, twice. I was like, never again, never again.
Okay, so this is very scintillating. However, running a fever and really want to go to bed. I need to ask, when are you planning on airing this? For patrons as well as on the regular feed, just so I know. I'm putting out a short episode this week on my podcast and just basically I'm calling in sick. I'm like 4.5 years, I've never missed a week. I get a day. Okay. Okay, guys. But I wanna like say if you want to hear my take on the Denson Nune Noah shit, go listen to Mormon Happy Hour. When can they expect?
Well, I can Patreon it right now. I will do that as soon as we sign off because that doesn't take me any time. I just upload the video.
Awesome.
Okay. But the I will, let's see. I have the kids tomorrow. I don't think I have any. Oh shit. I'll do my best to get it out sometime tomorrow. How's that for commitment?
Wow.
That'll give me a quick. Full day.
Yeah.
I have 4 extra kids in addition to my 4 kids. I will have Jesus. 8 kids in my house tomorrow.
Fuck.
Oh my gosh.
So I might just hide in my closet with my headphones on and edit instead of dealing with life appropriately.
There you go.
my goal is sometime tomorrow.
Okay, cool. I'll let listeners know that it'll go up the same day that my little short episode goes up, or the following day, so Thursday or Friday. Okay. Just give you another day of leeway.
Yeah, that'd be perfect.
Sweet.
All right, let us know if you need like reinforcements on the comments.
Yeah,
I'll watch for them. I haven't really been commenting. I mean, I've been trying to like sort everything out and you know form my own opinion, but
we'll see.
A lot of reinforcements myself. Yes. Yeah. All right. Sounds good.
Well, thank you so much.
Yep. All right.